All right. Do you think that there can be an argument made that this milder form of the virus, this Omicron, which is apparently much milder, there's, as of today, we're December 8th, is that today? There is, as far as what I read yesterday, I should say, December 7th, there was zero deaths attributed to this. So if this is a milder form, and it seems to just give headaches and body aches, would there be an argument that one should actually catch that, and that would be safer than even getting vaccinated?
It's a little early to say that, but I wanted to give you an update.
I don't want to recommend that to people. I'm just saying, is that a possibility?
But there's a group in Boston that that is absolutely knocking it out of the park. It's a company called Inference, and the lead author is Venkata Krishnan. And a paper just came out in preprint. Oh, by the way, people need to know, and who's listening, our peer-reviewed literature runs anywhere from 6 months to 4 years behind reality. So when we actually publish something in New England Journal of Medicine, or we publish something in these journals, in my journal, I told you, I submitted something in June, the treatment paper, which is so important. It was printed online in August. It didn't appear in print until January. That's a typical publication cycle. In COVID-19, we all agree that's too slow. So COVID-19 was fair game, is called preprint, meaning that we get our data out early before it's gone through peer review, just so people can make decisions. And so Venkata Krishnan 2 days ago just put this out on Omicron. Omicron is not a transformer. It's very important.
Your kids think it's a transformer.
You thought it was a transformer?
That's what I
Paul
heard.
Alexander on his post in Brownstone. Actually, on the McCullough Report, that's what I did. I had to put Optimus Prime on there. It's not a transformer, Joe. It's actually the name. It's the name in the Greek alphabet. But it's interesting. Venkata Krishnan tells us there are 37 mutations in the spike protein. This blows off the socks off anything else. There are 6 deletions, 1 insertion. And the assertion, by the way, has some code that is almost for an epitope of another virus. There are 30 substitutions that are non-unique. You can find them in alpha, beta, gamma, and the other ones. And 16 of the 37 are called surge mutations. So something happened in the surges when there was a lot of prevalence of disease and the virus was replicating, being passed to people in these surge times, where the virus made a lot of mistakes. So I was called on TV last week for Fox News. Laura Ingraham said, "Dr. McCullough, what's the update on Omicron?" I said, "I think it looks like an evolutionary mistake. The you can actually do modeling studies based on, once we know the code, and the code is known really quickly. Dr. Fantini out of France did modeling studies, let it on our networks. We found out quickly. The transmissibility, to give you a perspective, for the Wuhan wild type, the original virus, the transmissibility number, transmissibility index, was about 2. The transmissibility of Delta, which has really been hard to treat, I think Delta's been way harder. What I had, you may have had Delta. I had Alpha. You may have had Delta. You could have still had Alpha. But transmissibility of Delta, 10. You know what the transmissibility of Omicron is? 4. So for the first time, we've actually gone down in transmissibility, and probably because the spike protein and the receptor binding domain, where it binds to the ACE2 receptor, is so dysmorphic that it actually can't invade the body as much. So that explains, we haven't heard about these fulminant pulmonary syndromes. We haven't heard about these thromboembolic. It's mild so far. Now, cross our fingers. People always ask me, is this a milder variant? I remember with Delta, is it milder? I said, wait a minute. What determines mild versus severe? Who gets early treatment? Being mild or severe is not a natural history variable. What early treatment is so transformational, that's what determines death or hospitalization.
But
so,
what if Omicron chose to be mild across the board,
right,
even without early treatment?
Right, that's the key. So far, we can just assume no early treatment. And so far, we're watching the reports carefully, but you're right. It looks like it's milder. And, you know, this could be, I don't think it's going to supplant Delta, because Delta is more transmissible and is very successful in the vaccinated. Now, Omicron has actually arisen from the vaccinated. You know, the kids that were passing the Botswana border, they were fully vaccinated. They were asymptomatic. But they had, when you do, Omicron's interesting. When you run a PCR test, there's 4 primers. There's an S protein, there's the nucleocapsid protein, the envelope protein, and the polymerase. There's 4. the spike protein is so mutated with Omicron that that actually primer drops out of the PCR pattern. It's called S gene dropout. So this is the first time, based on, you know, it depends on what PCR has done, that actually the PCR itself could get a, give a hint that it's Delta. Otherwise, PCRs just tell you, you know, SARS-CoV-2 positive or negative, and then we have to wait for the public health labs to do the sequencing to tell us what variant it is. In this case, the PCR test could give us a signature. So we'll know, with Omicron, we'll know. What I've predicted last week on national TV, and again, science is changing. A person is not science. I'm not science. I'm just a doctor interpreting data, and it's subject to being better informed with more data. But I'm predicting right now, I think it's going to be like Eta and Lambda. Because it's less transmissible than Delta, I think it'll carve out its own ecological niche. But there would be no reason for it to supplant Delta unless it basically becomes almost like a, an infection of preference for the vaccinated.
Wow. One thing that we've been talking about recently that concerns me, and I wanted to know what your thoughts on this were, seeing as you spent your life in the medical establishment. My concern is that corporations, their goal is to continually make more money. Every year they'd like to make more money than the last. This year for the pharmaceutical companies, it's been an insanely profitable year because of the vaccines. I have a real concern, I wonder if you share this concern, that they're going to try to continue to make the same amount of money. And the best way to do that is to continue to encourage people to be vaccinated and to create new vaccines, even if they're not necessarily the right thing to do.
If it's about making money, I'd almost prefer the vaccines get full FDA approval. You know, none of the vaccines are FDA approved.
Right.
Even Pfizer's not FDA approved. That was a false talking point. Pfizer has a continuation of the EUA. BioNTech, which is not in the United States, got a biological licensing agreement. That still means they have to do a lot to get approved. They have to actually have a approved package insert. They have to commit to post-marketing studies on myocarditis. They have to give safety warnings on pregnancy. They're not there yet. So no product is approved in the United States. They're all emergency use authorized. Everybody needs to know that. Another false talking point, that Pfizer was approved on August 23rd, went all the way up to the President of the United States. Since when in history do we have false talking points issued out of FDA meetings that go up to the President of the United States? So they're not approved. Listen, everybody's entitled to make some money. What seems unfair about this? What seems unfair about this is the government paid for the development costs. The government pre-purchased the products, even before they knew it was going to work or not work. And we know that with a new pharmaceutical company, a new product that was developed by a pharmaceutical company, whether it's a new company or existing company, we know a benchmark for a blockbuster drug would be $1 billion of sales in its first year. That's a benchmark. And typically half of that billion is spent on the sales force. There's a investment of billions of dollars in R&D. Do you know with the vaccines that Pfizer in its first year hit $33 billion? And now I think next year, $36 billion, no development costs. The government, no sales force, because they don't have to sell the vaccine. Mm-hmm. They are just the suppliers to the government program.
Is that a dangerous relationship?
What's dangerous is not fair balance. If we had FDA-approved products, you see them on TV. When's the last time you saw a drug commercial? Let's say you have a drug that's for psoriasis. Oh, my psoriasis is cleared up. Remember the people diving in a pool and they don't have any psoriasis. They have beautiful skin. They're happy and they're dancing. Okay, you take a psoriasis drug, Joe. It says, warning, may cause tuberculosis. Get a TB test, warning. There's fair balance. That's the U.S. Drug and Cosmetic Act. That's the Lanman Act. We actually have the Truth in Advertising Act. There must be fair balance. Every product has a risk and a benefit. Every product has a risk and benefit. We can never propose a product to anybody in the United States without fair balance. You mentioned myocarditis, and I have to tell you, since you had him on the show, and since we're both graduates of the University of Michigan, which, by the way, is, you know, I think it's one of the better places in the United States. He went to medical school there. I went to graduate school there. I went to UT Southwestern. I finished top of my class. I'm Alpha Omega Alpha. You know, the doctors who are in the know how to treat COVID-19, we're no chump change. I went to the University of Washington in Seattle, top medicine residency program in the United States. I'm the most published person in my field in world and history. I have 51 publications in COVID-19. I have U.S. Senate testimony. A judge just relied on my testimony to overturn the entire mandates for the whole country. I'm telling you, when I had an interview with Tucker Carlson, he started getting worked up. He looked at the monitor. He goes, if you don't know who this doctor is, why don't you look at him? He goes, he has authority. And he's right. I do have authority, Joe. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because what's going on here is that we have a situation where we have people in positions of authority. The person you had on here in a position of authority was Sanjay Gupta. And I'm going to pick on him a little bit because Sanjay Gupta came on Sesame Street, and I want to show the graphic if I don't have it. He came on Sesame Street, and what he did is with another CNN correspondent, he was actually seducing children into taking the vaccine.
Yeah, I saw that. It's very disturbing.
Okay, seducing. I am telling you, no good doctor would do that because there must be risks and benefits. Did he tell the kids and the parents there's FDA warnings that this can cause heart inflammation? Did the other CNN correspondent, who's a mother, did she show an ounce of concern? What Scott Atlas uses in his book, Joe's, the term he uses is off the rails. We're off the rails. People in positions of authority are doing bad things, trying to seduce children into taking a vaccine that has official FDA warnings on it without giving fair balance. That's malfeasance. That's wrongdoing by people in position of authority.
Particularly when you look at the risk versus reward benefit for children, right? The risk of COVID is very, very low for children. When they talk about children being hospitalized for COVID, they almost all have severe comorbidities.
I don't care if it's one case of myocarditis.
Right.
If it could happen, the idea that we would not present something in a fair, balanced manner on TV. There should never be an official on TV that says the vaccines are safe and effective, take them. Listen, they have to be proven. Show us the safety and show us the efficacy and let people make a choice. One cannot conclude that they're safe and effective without showing any data. I would never do that.
And this is the only time that's ever been forced on the American people that way, where things have
It's the only
promoted.
Time it's ever been presented to the American right. people. You know, I could tell you what, we've got a history in this. If you go back to this is Sanjay Gupta and the CNN correspondent.
Yeah, I've
there,
seen it.
There was no fair balance there. I got nauseated when I saw that.
It's just bizarre that he would do that. I don't understand it.
Well, remember, he parroted a talking point that our head of the National Allergy and Immunology Branch parroted. They said that there was no data for ivermectin. They said it was a horse dewormer. Now, either they knew or they should have known the 63 supportive studies and the over 30 randomized trials. Hey, that's a court of law. Either you knew or you should have known. A person in a position of authority either knew or should have known. Scott Atlas says they're incompetent. They don't know. That's what he says. Bring him on. He'll tell you. He thinks they're incompetent. I'm not so sure. It's either they knew or they should have known. Either one of those is good. Either he knows or he should have known. Either one is not good. Which one is it?
Right.
Ask him. Ask him. Give him a call. Which one is it? Do you know about the myocarditis risks or should you know?
He most certainly knows because I showed it to him on the show. I mean, that was a weird moment on the show, in fact, because he was trying to look at the results and spin it the other way. And I had to go over it with him again, saying, no, 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 you're looking at this wrong. It's the opposite of what you're saying. There's a 4 to 6-fold increase in myocarditis in children that are vaccinated versus the amount of children that are hospitalized from COVID for all causes. So they're 4 to 6 times more likely to get myocarditis than they are to even be hospitalized for COVID, which is crazy.
Right. That's the Hogue analysis, not disputed by the FDA. You know, there's another point. This is a nuance. I want to get this out. There is basically misleading paper in the New England Journal of Medicine that says that if one gets COVID, the respiratory illness, they're more likely to get myocarditis than take a vaccine. Okay. I can tell you, I'm a doctor. I've taken care of hundreds and hundreds of COVID patients. I've advised on thousands. By the way, none of the media doctors outside of myself, Steve Smith, and gosh, maybe there's one other on there. I know George Farid, maybe. I think there's three doctors that America has seen on TV that's actually seen a COVID patient and actually treated a COVID patient. That's it. You know, the minority witness in the Senate testimony, Ron Johnson waited about 2 hours into the testimony. After he was advising on America on how to handle COVID-19, he said, "Doctor, have you ever seen a COVID patient? You ever treated a patient?" And he said, "No, I haven't." He says, "I have no more questions." I'm telling you, there is almost a fraudulent scheme to this. This New England Journal of Medicine paper said that myocarditis more likely in those with COVID-19 than with the vaccine. What we know is that someone sick enough to be in the hospital who's in the ICU can have a small rise in troponin. That's the blood test indicating cardiac injury. But half the people in the ICU have that anyway, from pneumococcal pneumonia, staph, sepsis, etc. It's just part of being in the ICU. Okay? The Chinese never called that myocarditis. They called that cardiac injury with COVID. The Chinese were right. It's just a troponin elevation. That's it. It's largely inconsequential. We don't do anything about it. That's very different than the explosive chest pain, early heart failure, EKG, and massive troponin rises we see with vaccine-induced myocarditis. They are two completely separate syndromes. What the New England Journal of Medicine paper is, they just use the numbers. If you have lots of adults being admitted to the ICU, you're going to have big numbers of people who have a trivial rise in troponin that's inconsequential. That's different than myocarditis after the vaccine, which has a lower occurrence rate.
And why is it myocarditis after the vaccine? Like, why is the vaccine inducing myocarditis at such a high rate when they're both, it's the spike protein is responsible for both of them, correct?
I think it's the lipid nanoparticles. And the lipid nanoparticles is very important. Remember, parts of the body are more lipophilic. They take up lipids better than others. The heart is interesting. It relies on about 80% of its fuel is fatty acids versus 20% sugar. The skeletal muscles are just the opposite. They're 80% sugar, 20% fatty acids. So we know that the lipid nanoparticles are almost certainly taken up in the heart preferentially. They're definitely taken up in the ovaries and the corpus luteum. The ovaries taken up in the adrenals. We know that they go to the brain. There's been enough autopsy studies of freshly vaccinated people. You can see what gets seeded. The vaccine goes everywhere in the body within a matter of hours. The vaccine seeds up in the brain, into the heart, the adrenals, the ovaries, elsewhere. And I think the vaccine actually loads the heart probably with more spike protein that one would ambiently get with a respiratory infection.
Because of the liquid nanoparticles.
The lipid nanoparticles.
Lipid nanoparticles. This is obviously something that most people should know. What you're saying is obviously information that most people, when you're talking about a population of 300 plus million people and 200 plus million people have been vaccinated already. This, I would like to think that this is information that people want to know.
I agree.
How much does it disturb you that this is being censored? Because on every other platform, this conversation we're having right now would be censored. Every other online platform, social media, they would censor this for sure on YouTube. But what you're saying is incredibly important.
Censorship that has suppressed for 2 years information on safe and effective early treatment and censorship on vaccine safety has led to large numbers of deaths, hospitalizations, and permanent disability. Joe, there is no bigger public health crisis than the impact of censorship in COVID-19.
We just did 3 hours, believe it or not. Isn't that incredible? I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your courage. Thank you for your dedication. Thank you for your time for coming here. And thank you for explaining this so eloquently. It's very disturbing, but I think we're all better off having this truth.
Thank you.
Thank you. If people want to, do you have a website that people can visit where more information?
You can follow me on America Out Loud Talk Radio, the McCullough Report. I issue a weekly report to the country.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.